Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome back to SpondyCast. We'd like to welcome back Dr. Walter Maximovich. He's a professor, clinician, and medical scientist in the Department of Medicine, Division of Rheumatology at the University of Alberta, Edmonton, Canada. He is Canadian Royal College and American Board of Internal Medicine certified in internal medicine and rheumatology, and the 2012 recipient of the Distinguished Investigator Award from the Canadian Rheumatology Association. He founded Care Arthritis Limited, a Canadian company focused on the development of personalized medicine strategies for patients with arthritis, and now serves as chief medical officer. He also, in our first episode, we got into much of his bio, no pun intended, on biomarkers and research as well. So welcome back, Dr. Maximovich.
It's a great pleasure to be back. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, we're going to talk about biomarkers, which seems to be the one of the what I like to think is part of like the future of this disease. Can you tell us a little bit about what biomarkers are and why they're so important in diagnosing and managing spondyloarthritis?
Yeah, so this is a huge topic, and biomarkers are used routinely in medicine, and they're used in different ways. So for example, if a doctor suspects that you might have diabetes, the doctor will measure the blood sugar, the blood glucose. So that's the most sort of simple example of a biomarker. And in the same way, we might use a biomarker, and it can be a protein in the blood or a carbohydrate. You know, there are different types of molecules that can be biomarkers. Most typically, they're often proteins, and we're often interested in using biomarkers so that we can make an early diagnosis. So for example, we use rheumatoid factor to make an early diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis. A challenge in spondylitis is that we do not have adequate biomarkers to make an early diagnosis. We do measure something called a CRP, which stands for C-reactive protein. And this is one of the commonest biomarkers that we test for. But it's not something that we only find in patients with spondylitis. It will also occur if, for example, you have an infection, if you have a pneumonia. It will occur in other diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. So it's an indicator that there is inflammation happening in your body, but that particular biomarker does not tell us why or what is causing that inflammation. And so what we would like is a biomarker that is specifically telling us that there is inflammation due to spondylitis. Another biomarker that we use is actually a genetic marker, which is the B27 gene. So that's another example of a biomarker. Now, B27, however, is also, even if you're positive for B27, doesn't mean that you will necessarily get spondylitis. Only maybe about 5% or so of patients who are people who are B27 positive and carry this genetic marker get the disease. So there's a lot of healthy people who carry the B27 gene. So these are the only two biomarkers that we have. I've indicated what their limitations are, and What we really need are additional biomarkers that will help us to make an early diagnosis. Now, we are actually working on such a biomarker, and we've just provided some preliminary information about a new biomarker that's based on a protein called 1433-ETA. And in some early work, we've shown that people with spondylitis are more likely to have an antibody to this 1433-ETA. So that's an antibody that does not occur in healthy people. And we think this antibody might help us to detect more patients with ankylosing spondylitis. So that's diagnosis. Then we also need biomarkers that will also tell us something about how active and how severe the disease is. So, for example, there may be a situation where a patient's already been diagnosed with spondylitis. And now the patient has been doing not too badly with treatment and now gets worsening back pain. And sometimes it may not be clear to the doctor if the back pain is due to the spondylitis or some other cause. Could it be the inflammation that's getting more active in spondylitis? And so we call those biomarkers of disease activity. Right now, what we have to do is an MRI, which, of course, is expensive. We'd like to have a test that will tell us something about how active a disease is so that we don't have to do the MRI. So that's biomarkers of disease activity. And then we also have biomarkers of joint damage. And so these biomarkers are really important because if they're elevated and they're telling us something about joint damage, then we might want to make treatment more intensive. And we do have such biomarkers in rheumatoid arthritis, but we don't have biomarkers of joint damage in spondylitis. So those are just sort of general, in general terms, how we sort of think about biomarkers and how they might help us in managing and controlling the disease.
So three areas: diagnosis, management, joint damage.
Yes.
Okay. So the 1433-ETA, this is a new one that you discovered, correct?
Correct. Yes. Awesome. So 1433-ETA is a very interesting protein that normally sits inside certain types of immune cells. And it's only within the immune cell. Now, in patients with rheumatoid arthritis, this protein appears outside the cell. And when it appears outside the cell, it can cause inflammation. But we can also measure this 1433-ETA protein, and we do that routinely in patients with rheumatoid arthritis. And so it helps us to make an early diagnosis. So we look for this specific biomarker in rheumatoid arthritis called 1433-ETA. Now, it's a little bit more complicated in ankylosing spondylitis. In ankylosing spondylitis, it's not the protein itself, the 1433-ETA protein. It's the antibody to the protein that is present in patients with spondylitis, in some patients with spondylitis. And we have some preliminary evidence that it's present in those patients that have more severe disease. So for some reason, that particular protein causes the immune system to make antibodies to that protein. And we measure these antibodies in patients with spondylitis. And we think it might be a new biomarker for early detection of spondylitis. And so We've already presented some results over the course of the past year, and we're doing more studies to see if this might help us to detect early disease and make an early diagnosis.
Oh, that would be fascinating, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
That would be amazing. Like, dreams come true for millions of people. They just don't know it yet.
Right? Yes. Now, the advantage that we think that this protein might have, this biomarker might have, is it detects different people from those who have the CRP biomarker that I mentioned earlier. And so if you add these two biomarkers together, CRP and the antibody to 1433 ETA, we think that we're capturing somewhere around 80 to 90% of people with spondylitis. So when you use it in combination, this is how, you know, we very often, when we're testing rheumatic diseases, we don't just measure one biomarker. We measure several biomarkers at the same time to tell us what kind of rheumatic disease it might be. And so we think that together with the CRP biomarker, we may well be detecting the majority of people with spondylitis.
Wow. Because how many did you say are detected with CRP?
There's maybe about 40 to 50% who have the CRP protein in the blood. It's elevated in the blood. So it's normally present in the blood. It can be present in the blood. But when it's increased above a certain level, that's something that we see in spondylitis.
Right.
But that's only something that we see in around 40 to 50% of people with spondylitis. And so, of course, that's not enough, that the sensitivity of that biomarker is not enough. We want something that's closer to 100%, of course. And so when we combine CRP with anti-1433, we're getting somewhere around 80 to 90% of people with spondylitis.
Wow. And that's approved now for screening for rheumatoid testing. Is that right?
Yes, the protein has been approved for a while for testing in rheumatoid arthritis. Yep.
Okay. And we're heading toward, hopefully, spondylitis. That would be fascinating. There are a lot of people who I've come into touch with over the years that their CRP is never elevated, but they clearly have a diagnosis. So it is, that could be huge. Could that be something that, like, somebody gets checked for as a baby or like as a young child that creates early diagnosis, or would it have to be upon symptoms?
Yeah, I think it would really be among symptoms. It'd be different if we had a treatment that could stop the spondylitis from appearing, but we're not at that level of sophistication with our treatment. So right now we can control the disease, but we can't stop it from occurring. We can't predict it from occurring at this point in time. And at the moment, we've got great therapies to control the disease. So we mainly use the diagnostic testing with biomarkers for people already presenting with symptoms.
Okay, interesting. I never thought of it that way. So you really only do very early screenings if you have a cure? Is that...
Yeah, if somebody has symptoms and a circumstance where you might want to use something like this, for example, there's a family history of spondylitis, right, and now a young person in the family is developing symptoms in their teens. And, you know, you want to catch a disease early because treatment outcomes are so much better when you recognize the disease early. And you institute treatment early. And, you know, a lot of those people go on to lead normal lives.
Yeah.
So it is important to detect treatment early because treatment outcomes are better. You preserve function. You minimize disability. And people can go about their normal lives.
Yeah.
So we're still accomplishing a great deal. And that's a scenario where you might particularly want to employ you know, a strategy like that.
And in general today, when we're screening using biomarkers, like how does that dictate the treatment plan?
Right. So let's say you've got a young person who's had back pain, chronic back pain. And I think all of those people should have a B27 test done. And I think a CRP would be useful in those people. So chronic pain in young people, especially if it occurs at night, especially associated with stiffness, I think those folks should have a B27 test, a CRP. And then we'll have to see with this biomarker if additional studies confirm what we've seen, then they would get the additional testing done. And then that would sort of, you know, provide the data that's necessary to expedite the MRI testing. You know, so now you get the complete package of diagnostic testing and you can be that much more confident in your diagnosis. And now you're moving on to treatment much more expeditiously than you would do otherwise.
Interesting. And well, I won't go down that rabbit hole. Spark and other collaborations you're working on along with other researchers to drive innovation in some larger areas of spondyloarthritis care. Can you talk a little bit about Spark and some of the research there?
Yes, so we're very interested. There are several consortia, including the Spartan Consortium. So and we work together. There are investigators in both Canada and the United States who work together. And, you know, we evaluate these biomarkers in patients who've had, you know, quite extensive evaluations, including MRI. And so we're looking at relationships between biomarker testing and what we see in MRI. And is there a relationship between the extent, the degree, the amount of inflammation on MRI and our biomarker test? We also have followed up patients over many years, and we've collected serum samples from patients. And now with the follow-up having taken place, which we know which patients have developed more severe variants of disease. So we can now go back and look at the serum samples that we collected at baseline to see which of our biomarkers predict which patients are more likely to develop severe disease. Now, that's really important because, as I mentioned earlier, if we can predict which patients are likely to develop more severe disease, those are the patients we're going to treat that much more intensively right from the get-go. So we're not going to, you know, we're really going to institute very intensive measures aimed at controlling the disease earlier in the disease course. And that's the same, you know, for a lot of chronic diseases. For a lot of chronic diseases, a big challenge is figuring out which patients are more likely to develop severe variants of disease so that we can bring our treatments into the picture much sooner in the patient's course.
Do you ever see a world where we're able to diagnose through medical records as opposed to patients complaining?
So that's an interesting question. It brings up the issue of AI and AI sort of looking at patterns in what patients report and looking at all the information presented. I think spondylitis is going to be a bit of a challenge for AI because a lot of the symptoms resemble what people with other back disorders get. So, for example, stiffness in the morning or stiffness after sitting for a while, you know, in a chair or sitting in a car for a while, you're going to feel stiff if you've got a worn out disc. You don't have to have spondylitis to feel stiff after you've been sitting in a chair for a long time. You know, people with other back disorders get stiffness. You know, trouble at night tends to occur more frequently in people with spondylitis, but people with other back disorders can also have pain at night. So it may be a little bit more challenging to, you know, have AI be able to develop a reliable algorithm just based on medical records. I think, you know, I do think that we will identify useful biomarkers. I mean, the Spartan and Spark organizations, you know, are actively pursuing biomarker testing strategies. And, you know, it's part of the concept of personalized treatment. It's about early diagnosis and having the biomarkers that will inform us which patients are more likely to develop severe disease. And then we can personalize treatment decisions for individual patients. But we need to have biomarkers so that we can really practice personalized medicine. And I'm very much a strong believer in personalized medicine. It's very hard to practice that at the moment. But as our treatment options increase and as we develop new biomarkers, that will set us on the road to personalized medicine for people with spondylitis.
I can't wait for that day. Patient participation in research. So are there ways for patients to get involved if they are interested in being part of studies in biomarkers and imaging?
Yes. So the first thing is that they should speak to their local rheumatologist, because local rheumatologists are often going to be aware of research projects. And then the Spondylitis Association of America websites and the Spartan websites are going to have information about research projects. I always encourage, of course, patients to participate in research because it's also part of the educational pathway. I think the more that patients understand about their disease, the better the care that they're going to provide for themselves. And the better the outcomes are going to be. The educated the patient, the more educated they are about their condition, the better the outcomes are going to be. So, you know, we've had educational programs at my own institution for about 50 years, and patients consistently report the benefits of understanding about things like biomarkers and appropriate imaging and so on, and understanding how to interpret the results.
Interesting. I would agree. I think it's important for us to get involved. Okay. So again, we're going to go back to cost, which you can tell is a big problem down here. I think in general, but when people may be concerned about the cost, not all the biomarker tests are covered. What advice do you have on prioritizing the biomarker testing?
Okay, so it a lot really depends also on the severity of a patient's condition and, you know, how they respond to treatment. And I think if it's very clear that a patient is not responding to treatment, the first thing that has to happen is the diagnosis needs to be reevaluated. And that's where the biomarker testing, I think, is really important. I mean, the biomarker tests, the B27, the CRP, are overall fairly cheap tests. And this is why I think they should be done in young people presenting with chronic back pain. So the cheap tests really should be done almost as a matter of routine in everyone. And then after that, it really depends on how a patient is, you know, responding to treatment. At the moment, there isn't really a great deal that we can offer, in fact, for additional biomarker testing. And we very much rely on imaging, especially MRI, to help us. But I think it's not going to be too far into the future where additional biomarker tests that are relatively cheap. And the 1433 EDA test is really fairly cheap. You know, it's going to vary, you know, in different parts of the US. But, you know, we're not talking about hundreds and hundreds of dollars. These are, you know, relatively cheap tests to be done.
And what about for spondylitis? Do people still do the Vectra test sometimes, I've heard?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's really useful in the setting of spondylitis. It's not something that's, it's a very expensive test. That really is an expensive test. And I think you're going to get a lot more information from getting an MRI scan done.
Okay. I think they're about the same cost from what
yes.
I read.
And the amount of information you're going to get from an MRI is going to tell you, A, how much inflammation you have, and whether you have an alternative cause of back pain. So the information, your money is much better spent on getting, you know, a really good quality MRI scan done rather than a Vectra test, which is actually, in my view, unproven in the setting of spondylitis.
Oh, interesting, because it's mostly rheumatoid, correct?
Yes. It's really been tested in rheumatoid, where I think it may have a role in rheumatoid arthritis, but I don't think it's of proven value in the setting of spondylitis.
Okay. So do you recommend patients with SPA use their sort of get to know? I mean, I think over the years, many of us, like, we get our biomarkers done and it's like before we go into the doctor and we check them out as quickly as we can and take a look at what's going on. But should they get to know their biomarker and imaging results as they continue with the disease? Not, hopefully it's not progressing, but to be more informed about how their treatments are changing?
Yeah, I think this ought to be done in the context of the overall health assessment. So, you know, chronic inflammatory joint disease is associated with, you know, increased risk of, you know, heart disease and strokes. And so it's particularly important, I think, for a patient with active spondylitis to also, for example, be tested for things like cholesterol. And, you know, that there needs to be an overall health assessment. The patient with spondylitis really does need to pay attention to their overall health and not just their spondylitis. And, you know, should be tested with biomarkers that are relevant to comorbidities. And I think this is really a very important aspect of the overall health assessment of a patient with spondylitis.
So get your physical every year.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, final question, unless we missed anything, but what do you find most exciting about the future of spondylitis research?
Well, what I find, two things that are coming together that are converging. One is the advances in imaging, which are giving us the most incredible assessments, and not only sort of static assessments, but now there's something called functional imaging, where sort of we can assess what's happening to the disease process in the joints. And then also all of these technologies that we call omic technologies. So we can, you know, look at gene expression and the vast array of proteins expressed in the blood and other molecules. So we can do these huge, we generate these huge data sets and a very comprehensive picture of, you know, proteins, metabolites, genes, carbohydrates. And so we're generating masses of data in each individual patient. And I can see a future where, you know, we have the computational ability to make sense of all of this. to relate this to the imaging, the very sophisticated imaging that we're getting from patients, and to really implement personalized treatment choices for patients. And this is all going to be associated with new developments in treatment, because biomarkers are also used to assess how effective treatments might be. So it's going to be, we're going to develop new therapeutics much faster because we're going to be able to tell with all of these biomarker strategies which therapeutics are really working. And we're going to be able to identify these at a much earlier stage in the development of a therapeutic. So all of this with AI and all of these new technologies, we're just producing huge masses of data that are really accelerating all of these things that I talked about, diagnosis, prognosis, and treatment. It's a very exciting time to be involved in, you know, in medicine. That's why I don't plan to retire.
I love it. And you all, everyone gets me excited when they talk about data. So, well, thank you so much. This is, did I miss anything that we didn't cover?
Well, I think I've told you the most important things. You know, all I can say is stay tuned, because these things are really emerging, you know, from one major conference to the next. We're hearing new things all the time. I think it's so important that the SAA is engaging patients and informing patients about these new advances. So these are opportunities for people to participate, but also I think really provide inspiration and hope for patients that we're really going to advance the care of patients with spondylitis. And this is going to happen in the near term. We're not talking about decades down the road. We're talking about near-term advances in patient care. And it's a very bright future for patients with spondylitis.
I would have to agree. Thank you so much, Dr. Maximovich. And I look forward to speaking again soon after we've gotten a little further.
It would be a pleasure. And I would be delighted to speak again. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Yeah, no, thank you for your dedication. Have a great day.
And you too. Take care.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.